Okay, let's start. So today we will talk about IC versus microarchitecture. We talked about this a little bit in the last lecture. We will review it. We will talk about IC trade-offs. And then we will see a toy ISA, which is called Y86. So this is the one we will use throughout the semester. And you will use it to design and build a very simple processor. And we will see the format of this ISA and how we could use this to encode and decode instructions. So we have mostly talked about it. Instruction set architecture is the interface between software and hardware. So our system stack, we have applications which try to solve some problem, and we use some language to solve those problems. We write our codes using high-level languages. Then we have a compiler and operating systems which we use to compile and run that program. So these are all part of our software stack. And in the hardware, we have circuits which actually carry all the computation that we are trying to do. And we have these microarchitecture which implements all the things that software is doing at the high level. So in order to tell the hardware to do something for us, that's what we use ISA for. So ISA is the semantic where it says how we should instruct hardware to do something. So whatever is guaranteed by ISA, hardware is supposed to do that operation for us. And as a programmer, we don't need to know how the hardware is doing all that stuff. All we need to know that if the ISA has defined something, we are expected that it is expected that hardware will actually carry that operation. And the difference between ISA and microarchitecture is the microarchitecture is the implementation of things that we have defined in ISA. And that implementation could be different for different company, different generation of processor. The microarchitecture for Spark processor may be very different from the Intel processor. Or even with Intel, the ISA you all know is called x86. Most of the Intel processors that we have now, they all use that ISA, but the microarchitecture is different in different generation. So if we combine ISA and microarchitecture, that's what architecture is consisting. So one example of real life example of ISA and microarchitecture could be cars. So car has some engine and some other mechanical components, and that's what drives the car. We could accelerate the car, we could brake the car, and there are many different operations. But as a user, like when I'm driving the car, I don't know how those mechanical operation is going on or how the engine is working. The interface between the driver and the car is just the brakes and pedals and other things we could see in the dashboard. And the interface says that if we press the accelerator, the car is supposed to move faster. But how it is done, that's not exposed to the driver. So here the ISA is the interface between the car and the driver, and the microarchitecture is the implementation of the car, how the car is actually accelerating when we are pressing the accelerator. So one concrete example with ISA could be add instruction. So for example, we write programs, they all may use add instruction to add two numbers. And ISA will say that what's the format of that add instruction, how many operands it takes, where is the source, where is the destination, etc. But actually how that adder is implemented, that's part of microarchitecture. And ISA doesn't define this. If Intel is coming up with a very new processor, which it comes up with a very sophisticated adder, it's possible to keep the ISA same, but change the microarchitecture. So here the interface or the operands of the semantic of the add operation, that belongs to ISA, but the implementation of that adder, that belongs to microarchitecture. And usually microarchitecture change faster than the ISA. Can anyone tell me why? Or do you have any guess? So x86 for Intel, it has been there for decades, but every 2 years, Intel is providing us with a new machine with new microarchitecture.
Because no one's keeping and using the ISA, so it can be the same like assemblers and programs, whatever.
Yes, so it's because we want to support the same application and same software stack. Otherwise, we have to change the compiler, we have to recompile everything. And this is actually people learned it in a hard way. So Alpha was an ISA which was really sophisticated at its time, which is around 80s, and they had at that time they were leading the industry, but they were not that keen with keeping the ISA same, so they were changing their ISA. And eventually, like, if there are applications people have already written and being used and deployed for years, people will just not move to or rewrite or change the compiler every time. So that's why nowadays we don't have any machine using the Alpha ISA, and Intel was wise enough, so they keep x86 even though it might not be the most sophisticated ISA. So what do we define in ISA? We say what would be the opcodes of the instruction, so how we know which instruction is represented by which bits. It says how should we access the memory, like what are the instructions that accesses memory, what's the format of those instructions, different instruction types, registers, condition code. So these are the main things that we will actually look at in this course. But ISA defines other high level things too. So it defines how the virtual memory is managed, if there is an interrupt, how that should be handled, how should we define that. Many different power and thermal management that usually the OS is responsible for. So those are many other things that is defined in ISA. And if you want to know more, you can take a look at Intel's handbook. And you can see that it's actually, it's a very rigorous document defining all the things. But mostly in this course, we will be focused on this part. So these are some example ISAs that we have nowadays. X86, that's the dominant one, but that's not the only one. So if you have most probably your cell phones, they have ARM processor, so that has a different ISA. Then supercomputers, the power processors or the Spark processors, they have a different ISA. And by ISA, it's just the difference is what operations they support, or how we define that operation, that's different. So the add operation may look different in those ISAs. So let's take a look at, so when all these people came up with this ISA, what they consider, so what are the things that could be different in different ISAs? So one thing that is pretty important is actually the instruction length. So we could design an ISA where each instruction takes the same length. For example, maybe 4 bytes. Each instruction is 4 bytes or 8 bytes or 32 bytes. So that would be fixed length ISA. Or we could have instructions where instruction could have very different lengths. So the benefit of fixed length instruction is it's easier to decode because we know where each instruction starts and ends. Even if we are trying to decode multiple instructions, so nowadays most of the processors, they execute multiple instructions per cycle. So in that case, it's easier to decode multiple instructions at the same time as we know where each instruction is starting and ending. But the downside is because it's fixed length, we may not use all the bits there. So maybe there are some bits are not used at all, and there were some compact encoding we could have used to reduce the length of some instructions. I guess hard to extend. So this is if an ISA is fixed length, and suppose we have exhausted all the bits and all the combination of bits, then it's actually very hard to add a new instruction because we just don't have any combination left. But if it's a variable length, then it's easier to extend it. So for the variable length, the good thing about it is because the encoding can be compact, we could have a shorter instruction stream. So all the instructions at the end are a bunch of zeros and ones, and if it just takes shorter number of bits to encode an instruction, that means that our bit stream is now shorter. So it will take less memory to keep all the instructions. We will need less cache space to keep all the instructions. So Intel 432, it was a very old processor in 80s. And it had an encoding for its instruction where instruction could use 6 bits to 321 bits. So it's a very random number. But I guess the upside was it was really compact. The downside of variable length instruction is it takes more logic to decode the instruction because we have to look at some portion of the bits to know what kind of operation the instruction is doing. Then there might be some other portion in the instruction which says what else it's doing. And I guess it's just hard to do multiple instruction because if we haven't decoded the first instruction, we even don't know where the second instruction starts, so it makes things sequential. Yes?
What do you mean by an instruction is?
Instruction is?
Yeah, what is an instruction?
What is an instruction?
Yeah.
So instruction could be something like add or move.
Just the add part of it, or like the add and
all the part, like the whole thing. So add, then the operands that you have. Any more questions? Okay. So another thing we consider when designing an ISA is addressing modes. Basically, it says that how we can obtain the occurrence for an instruction. So there are multiple ways we can get the operand. It could be a register value, it could be a constant, or it could be something we're getting from memory. And as you've seen in x86 assembly, there are many ways we actually access memory. We use displacement and scaling, and there are, at least for x86, there are a few, there are some good number of addressing modes available. So I guess this, for x86, you're kind of familiar. For ARM, there is a way to actually we can just shift the register value and get use that value as a memory location. VAX is another ISA, which we will actually see more examples of that discuss. It actually could use register values, which is a pointer to pointer. Any question? Okay. So then we could consider condition codes. So I guess this is the one you have seen. So if we compare two values based on the result, the condition gets set or reset, and based on the condition, we could jump to someplace. But an alternative could be that we do actually the whole thing in one instruction. So this instruction says that branch only if R11 and R12 is equal. In that case, jump to somewhere. Any question? Okay. So now let's talk about another fundamental issue that we consider in ISAs. So basically, we are saying that ISA would say what kind of instructions we have in our machines. And these instructions could be different. So in the high level, when we are programming in C or C++ or Java, that's a high level language we are using. And at the hardware, we just have some control signals which are doing all the work. So our ISA could be very close to the high-level language, or also it could be very close to the hardware. And depending on how we define the capability of the ISA, we actually have two kind of machines. Reduced instruction set computer and complex instruction set computer. So when I say complex, it's more like very close to the high level language. And if when we are saying reduced, it's much simpler, which is more close to the hardware. So I guess this is what we are kind of saying, that between the hardware and the high level language, there is a large gap. And our ISA could be anywhere in this spectrum. It could be very close to high-level language, or it could have the capability of very simple things, which is more close to what more close to the hardware. So by complex things, we kind of saying that these are the things which we could do in our high-level languages. One extreme example could be like having one instruction which does the Fourier transform, or just one instruction which does sorting, or even calculates the polynomial. So if you actually want to write a quick sort in C, even that's kind of a moderate amount of coding. But with the CISC processors, what we are saying that there would be just one instruction, and if we use the correct format and operands, all the sorting would be done in hardware. So we don't actually have to write the whole code. So VAX is an example of CISC machine. It had all these complicated instructions. Also, one example is it had access to multi-dimensional arrays with just one instruction. So if I had three-dimensional arrays, we could access it with just one instruction, with even the bound checking. Like even in C, C doesn't give us any guarantee on bound checking. It doesn't check if our array index is out of bound, but VAX had this capability that the instruction would check the bounds in the hardware. So what are the trade-offs? Like why we would,
So will large magic gap have the ISA farther from the machine language or farther from the high level language?
Farther from the high level language. So I guess the people who gave the name, they were hardware people. So in their mind, where they see it is far away from the high level language, so the semantic gap is higher. Okay, so what are the trades off with CISC versus RISC? So for CISC, we can use a very simple compiler because the program would look like very much like the high level language, even in the assembly. But then the hardware is very complex because within the hardware it has to support quicksort and Fourier transform and all these indexing. But on the other hand, for RISC, compiler has to be very clever because all we are giving it is like simple add and move and very simple instructions. But it actually makes the hardware designer's life easy because they don't have to implement quicksort. Only thing they need to provide support is adds and multiplication and moves. I guess there is a consideration of performance. So which one do you think would be better, like in terms of performance, faster, RISC or CISC? Like who thinks RISC would be faster? Okay, and who thinks CISC would be faster? No one? So it's actually kind of debatable. If we are doing things in the hardware and the designer is very efficient, maybe they can come up with a way which it actually works better and faster. But if the hardware architect didn't do a good job, it could happen that maybe just using the simple operation from the software was working better. And actually it happened. Like, the Intel 32 processor that I was showing, it had an operation where just using simple operation would actually beat the performance of that processor. But I guess there is another consideration is with CISC processor, the instructions are more compact, so they take less space. They take less space in cache and memory, and in that sense, it may do better if we are our bottleneck is the access to instruction stream. But in general, So in general, when we are trying to optimize some code, or the compiler has this streams are a very simple operation and it's trying to optimize it. So what it will do is it will try to figure out when we are doing the memory accesses, can we move around values in a way that we issue all the memory access, and when the data comes from memory, we do the computation by overlapping computation and communication. So if the compiler is intelligent, actually it can do a pretty good job of optimizing even the simple codes. But if the instruction has just one complex instruction, then compiler has no control over it. We are kind of depending on what the hardware architect, how the hardware architect designed the code. So this is why yes.
So for Cisc, mm-hmm. if the compiler was optimizing on a Cisc machine, can't the compiler choose to use simpler instructions to replace one complex instruction?
Yes. Actually, it could, but the reason we had Cisc is so that compiler doesn't need to do. But suppose I already have a program which is written in Cisc, and I know that the hardware that I have is not working that well. So in that case, I can have another layer where that layer takes the Cisc program, compiles it to simpler programs, and then optimize it. So that's actually, we had a machine called Transmeta, which did the exact same thing. So they would take Cisc instructions and they will make it to complex, simple instruction and optimize it. So that's why I'm saying, I guess what the takeaway should be, there is Cisc at one end and RISC at the one end, but in between, there is a lot of things we could do. But that's a good question. So at the beginning of when we started with Cisc, the compiler was not that good enough or intelligent to do all these optimizations. So at that time, Cisc was more popular. But then we figured out that it's hard to optimize memory stalls if we implement all the things in hardware. Then also sometimes it's actually become slower compared to just using the simple instructions. And that led to this RISC processor. And I guess this person, John Koch, he's the first one who said that he had an idea that not even just simple instruction, we should expose even the control signals to the compiler, and compiler should manage all the things and do the optimization. And he actually won the Turing Award at some point of time for his work on this compiler optimization. So at the end, what the instruction, the ISOs that we see, they're kind of in the middle, like VAX, we could say that this is definitely Cisc, MIPS definitely RISC, but what we see nowadays, they are kind of in between the spectrum. So when we see the characteristics, usually RISC processors, they have fewer simpler instructions. Usually they have separate instructions to access memory. So for example, suppose I have this add instruction. And for x86, add could take two operands from register, or it could also take operand from memory. But for RISC processor, they just say that, okay, the instructions that are doing some operation, they will only operate on register values, and there would be one separate instruction which is dedicated to bring data from memory. So if we want to do add on two memory operands, first we actually use the move instruction to bring data from memory to processor, and then the add instruction adds the data. Usually they have fixed length because it just makes decoding easy. And for the complex instruction set architecture, decoding logic is really complicated. Usually they have more registers to compensate that they don't have the capability for all the other things. Usually they don't have instruction with two memory operands and they have fewer addressing codes. So basically it just makes the ISA simpler. But again, there is no hard rule which says that this is CISC, this is RISC. Basically x86 or alpha, they're kind of in the middle. They may have some properties of these, but some of the properties of CISC. Any more questions? Okay. So now let's get to Y86. So this is an ISA that we will use throughout the semester. So it has some similarity with x86, so which is a CISC ISA, but we will ignore most of the x86 instructions. And these are the only instruction that Y86 has. So it's a very simple toy ISA, which kind of looks like 86. And we will use a very different encoding than 886. So basically, it's a simple ISA that you will use to design a processor. And it is simpler so that it's easier to design. If we definitely don't want to design x86 decoding. So you'll see that throughout the course that it's designed in a way that so that it makes your life easy. So what are the instructions? Let's start with move instruction. And the move instruction has this format. Before move, we have source and destination, two letters. The first one designates source. The second one is destination. And we could have three kind of values for source and destination: immediate, register, and memory values. However, it doesn't support all the combinations. What we have is moving value from moving a constant to a register. So this is IR move Q. Register to register, this is RR move Q, memory to register, and register to memory. So these are the options that we have. The ones that are in gray, Y86 does not support it. For the move instruction, we actually have a conditional move. So it says that copy the value if the condition is met. So we have some flags, which we will see later. Those are set or reset based on some arithmetic and logic operations. And based on how the flags are set, then we can say that move if the value is greater than zero. In that case, move this register to RBX. And we have, so here we are, I'm showing only the greater than instruction, but it has support for less than or equal, greater than or equal. So we will see those. Then it has an instruction, yes.
So in the conditional move, you don't supply the types of the operands in the beforehand?
The types of the operand is here we can see. So for this one, it's all, it is two registers. So that's, I guess, okay, we will see it in a couple of minutes. But do you want to add something?
Yeah. It's always registered to register.
Okay. Yes.
Do we have access to half to 32 bits? L words?
No. So the operands that we have are all 64 bit, right? Yeah. So that's the only thing we have. So there is no other type of variable. But again, so think from, instead of a programmer's perspective, think of a designer's perspective. Like, because you don't have to implement all kind of variables, it will just make it easier for you. And I guess if you know how to implement one type of variable, it just, you will know how to implement other types of variables. So then we have this instruction which is called halt, and it what it does, it stops the processor. I guess for real processors, this is not how it works. So usually when the program exits, OS takes over and it's operating system's responsibility to clean up and do other things. But here, like whenever we see halt, that just means that the processor stops. Any question? So how should we specify the addresses? So here I'm showing the RM move Q instruction, which is move from a register to a memory location. And it means that take the value of register R11 and put it in a memory location, which we will calculate by using the value of R12 and adding 10 to R12. So this is the addressing mode that we have. Like in x86, I guess you have seen scaling and using displacement. We don't have all those addressing modes. We just have this one. So again, as I said, like the arithmetic operations that we have, they can only operate on registers. So this is again a property of RISC processor, right? So if I have an instruction like this, where I take a value of this memory location and I want to add it to register R12, we cannot use just one add instruction. So what we have to do is, first we have to use this move instruction, memory to register move Q, which will take this location and move the value to R11. And only after that we could add R11 and R12 and put it in R12. So this kind of, it will take more instructions, but when you implement it, it will make easier to implement. So the hardware is more simpler. Okay. So this is another example where we actually, we have a scaling effect in the addressing mode. So R11 is multiplied by 8 and then we add 10 to it, and that is supposed to be our memory location, and we will add it to R12, put it in R12. So in x86 you could have just used one instruction to do that, but here you will actually need more. So first of all, so these are all the instructions that we have. And you can see that add, subtract, and XOR, these are the only logical and arithmetic operations. So there is no multiplication. So here, in order to multiply by 8, we have to come up with some other technique. And one way to multiply by 8 is we could multiply it by 2 and do the same operation 3 times. So if we add the same value, R11 and R11, that's kind of multiplying by 2. So we have to use the add instruction 3 times to multiply R11 by 8. Then we use the memory to register move operation, which will take the value of this memory location and put it in R11. And after that, because our add instruction can only operate on registers, so then we add R11 and R12. But again, I guess the goal is not to come up like take one program and write it in y86. The goal is, given that we have something written in y86, how we would implement in the hardware, and by having simpler capability, it will make the design easy. So that's, I guess, the motivation behind RISC. If it makes the hardware more simple. The next thing is constant. The instructions that we have, only the IR move Q, that's the only one which would take a constant. We have the jump instruction, which takes the addresses, but those are not like, those we cannot use to move a constant to some other place. So IR move Q is the only instruction which operates on constant. So if we want to have a very simple increment operation, because the add doesn't operate on immediate values, what we have to do is first we have to move this one to some register, and then use the add instruction. So that's what we are doing. With IR move Q, we are moving one to R11 and then using the add instruction. Yes?
I said not the constant operand will the other address constant operand use.
So for example, jump. If I say that jump to address 0x123 something, some value. So that's also a value in the instruction, right? But that's not a value that we are, so that's indicating an address, though it's a constant. That it's an immediate value that represents address, but that's not something we could use to operate on constant. So this is the only instruction, IR move Q, that could operate on immediate values. Any more questions? Yes.
If you specify a non-address constant and it's in decimal like that, is there work that you have to do in the hardware to convert it to hexadecimal and bits?
So in the assembly, can I put hexadecimal numbers or other decimal numbers? That's the question.
The question is, if you put decimal numbers, mm-hmm. is there extra computation needed to translate them into hexadecimal?
So that's the job of the compiler. So in the hardware, it only sees zeros and ones in binary, right? So it doesn't matter if we write it in hexadecimal or decimal or some other format. So the compiler and the assembly has to make sure that everything is translated to binary. So hardware only, the hardware sees zeros and ones, like 010101, like in binary. So yeah, we need extra work to convert it. You want it. So condition codes, the two condition codes that we will use in our assignments are zero flag and signed flag. And only these four operations, which are our arithmetic and logical operations, they actually set reset these flags. No other instruction will set the flags, and we don't have overflow flag and carry flag. And again, just to make things simpler. So I guess this is just to show that how the flags are set and reset, but this is pretty simple. I think you all kind of know that. Like if it's a subtract operation, depending on the value of after we subtract second from first, the flags would be set or reset based on the value. So for example, if the value is less than zero, the sign flag would set to one. So again, this is something I guess you don't need to memorize. This is just a table you will use when you're designing your hardware. Then we have instructions which we will use to operate on the stack. So Y86 comes with a stack, and like any other stack, it will go downwards, and the register RSP points to the top of the stack. So whenever we need to pop something, we will take RSP So we will take whatever is pointed by RSP, put it in RBX, then we have to make sure that RSP is adjusted correctly. When we want to push things, that means that first we actually move RSP to appropriate position, so this is the place we want to push, but then now this becomes the new top of the stack, so we have to adjust RSP to make sure that it points at the top of the stack. Any questions? So now let's take a look at the formatting. So we said that these are the instructions, these are the things they could do. So all these are specified by ISA, but also it says that what is the encoding of all these instructions. So you can see that Y86, it's a variable length ISA. Instructions can take from 1 byte to 10 bytes. And different byte or positions of bits represent different things for each instruction. So first thing to know that the first byte, it will tell us what kind of operation this instruction represents. So if the first byte contains 00, so this is in hexadecimal. So if it contains 00, it means that the instruction is halt. If it's, let's go here. If it's 90, it means it's a return. Then let's go to, let's go to this one. So if the instruction in the first byte, you see that first 4 bits contain 6. It means that it will be one of the logical or arithmetic operations. And we saw that we have 4 of them. So this next 4 bits, which is defined as function here, this will actually tell us that what kind of operation this instruction indicates. I guess similar thing happens with the conditional move. The first 4 bits, if we have 2 in it, it means that it is a conditional move instruction. And then the next 4 bits in the first byte will say that what kind of condition it's specifying. So there are 0 to 6, so there are 7 options we have here. So first one, if there is 0 after 2, It actually means that ignore the condition. So it doesn't matter what the condition is, we will always make the move. So basically it becomes register to register move. Then we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 for less than, equal, not equal, and etc. For the logical operations, since we have 4 options, so we could have 0, 1, 2, and 3 to indicate if it's an add operation or subtract or AND or XOR. And similar thing will happen with jump. Jump can have some condition. So the first byte, it will say what's the opcode of that instruction. If there is 7 in the first 4 bits, which 7 in hexadecimal, it means that it's a jump instruction. Then we need to look at the next 4 bits. And depending on what's the value of the next 4 bits, we will know if it's jump regardless any condition, or jump less than equal, or jump less, and etc. So that's the first byte. Then we actually have place for registers. So if some instruction is supposed to take register operands, then the next byte will tell us what are those registers. So for example, compare. After we have the opcode, which is the first byte, we have 8 bits for 2 registers. So it means that we have 4 bits to represent 1 register. And it takes 2 registers, so that's why we have RA and RB. I guess this is kind of a special case, which is immediate to register move. This is a move instruction, and it takes a constant value and moves to a register. So this V here, this is 8 bytes. This is our constant value, and it will take that value and put it to RB. So to be consistent with other instructions, see that this RB is actually at the same place as the other instruction. And this one, like the first 4 bits of the second byte, they are set to F, which just means that no register. So this is again like something we are using at Y86 to make things simpler. And I guess then the next bytes are used for immediate. So if it's an immediate instruction, we have 8 bytes for the value. If those are jump instruction, we have 8 bytes for the address. Any questions? Yes?
Are these all, is Y86 fixed like instruction commands?
No, so.
Okay.
So basically it's saying that instruction can have 1 byte to 10 bytes of length. And depending on the opcode, the first byte, we could say that what is the instruction, what is the length of this instruction. If I see 00 in the first byte, that just means that the instruction has a length of 1. If I start decoding and see that one instruction is starting with 2 in the first 4 bits, then immediately we know that this is a C move instruction which requires 2 bytes. I guess then for this instruction, the immediate to register move, if we start decoding the instruction and we see that it's starting with 3 in the first 4 bits, then we know that the length of the instruction is 10 bytes, and the next instruction would start at 11th byte. Any question? So as I said that the register, we have 4 bit to represent each register, which basically means that we could have 16 registers. And this is a table which says that what value represents which register. Again, this is not something you need to memorize. Just this is a table you will have, and you will look it up when you are designing your thing. But I guess the special thing here is F1111, which, as I showed, that this represents that there is no register. So this is again a design choice that Y86 designers made to make things easier to implement. So let's take a look at how actually the instruction stream could look like. So this is an add instruction, and the ISA says that add takes two registers, RA and RB, and it also says that, I guess let's go here, it says that it will start with 6, and then the next 4 bits would say what kind of logical or arithmetic operation it is. So for add, we need to put 0 here, and the next byte will tell us the value of the register, the index of the registers. So here, if we have this instruction, add Q, add RAX and RSI, so what we have to do is, for add, we know the first byte is 60, but then we have to decode the registers. So RAX is 0, and you can see that RSI is 6. So that's why we are putting 0 and 6 here. So whenever the hardware sees that it has a bit stream, which is 6006, then it decodes it and knows that this is that instruction, and it's taking two register 0 and 6, which are RAX and RSI. I guess, and I guess this is, I already showed it, like add is represented by 0 in the second 4 bits in the first byte, subtract is 1, and 2 XOR 3. And I guess these are the move operations. So I guess the main thing to remember here is for the instruction to register move, because it just takes one register, we have this extra F here to denote no register. And the immediate value is 8 bytes.
You might also find out the order of registers on
here or here?
An MR move Q. So it's written D of RB, comma RA, and that is not a typo. It's in the table, but a lot of people
don't. So you take the displacement, you add it to the value of RB.
Yes.
So basically, you see that we are keeping the format the same, again, so that it's easier to implement. So whatever you would use to implement our register to move, the same things would kind of, you will use similar logic to do memory to register. So here we have the conditional move instructions. I think this is, I guess there is actually not that much to complexity here. So it will start with 2s in the first 4 bits. Next 4 bits is the function bits, which will say what kind of operation we would do. But I guess the special case is this RR move Q, where we have to put 0 in the second 4 bits. So it just means that copy value unconditionally, like don't look at the condition code. For jump here, the destination, it has 8 bytes, and so in x86. The destination address is kind of a relative address, but because we want to make things simpler, here the address is actual memory address. Like whatever address we want to jump, we put that address in this location. And we have 8 bytes, which means that we could only jump 2 to the power 8 plus minus in both directions. So here the stack operation. So stack operation push would start with A0, pop will start with B0, and then we actually have the value of the register in the beginning of the second byte. And you can see that then there is this F, which basically means that no register. So this is again a design choice that we have made to make things consistent. You could have said that why keep the F, like we could just leave the F and make it 12 bits of instruction. But we wanted to design an ISA which is in byte granularity. So that's why it takes 2 bytes. Call and return. Basically, the call pushes the address of the next instruction. Yes.
Are we doing little endian? Yes.
So yeah, with all the immediate values in the V and D that we have seen for jump and immediate instruction, all the values have to be written in little endian. We will actually see some examples, yes.
So what happens on the stack after they allocate the bytes? Does the least significant bit go to the lowermost byte?
So for here, everything is 8 byte granularity. So when you're taking a value from memory or putting it into the memory, at that point you don't have to worry about little endian. Or big endian. But when we are, I guess let's go back here. So here, this is a value we are putting, which is an address. And this is where we have to put the value as little endian. So the LSB bits would come first and then so on. So we will actually see more examples. I guess let's just go to the example in that case. So here we have a simple function which is taking the value the register X and adding 1 to it. And if you compile it to assembly x86, this is what we will get. But remember y86, it doesn't have the capability to add values, add a constant to a register. So for y86, what we are doing is first we are moving constant 1 to RAX and then adding RAX and RDI. So RDI is our variable. And then we have this return operation. So we want to see that how it would look like if we encode it in y86. And again, there is nothing to memorize. Like we have the ISA in front of us and we will try to figure out how to encode the instructions. So the first instruction is immediate IR move Q. And we look at the table. It says that IR move Q starts with 30. So we put 30. Then we have this F because we are just using one register, so here is the F. And then it has RB and B. So for RB, our register is RAX, and the immediate value that we have in our instruction is 1. So here, as I said, we have to put the value in little endian. So that's why we are starting with 01 and all the MSBs are 0 here. And again, this is in hexadecimal. So now what we have to do is we have to put what's the value of Rx. And if you look up your table, this is the value of Rx is 0. So then this becomes the bit stream, which represents the first instruction. The second instruction is at Q, and then we have to register RDI and RAX. So we go to here, which is our, this is the format of our arithmetic operations, which starts with 6, and then there is 4-bit function code, which for add we need to look up. And then we have place for 2 register index, RA and RB, and the registers we have is RDI and RAX. So for add, we know that the 4-bit we have used is 0. So that's why we put 0, and then you need to look up the index of the registers, and you will find that RDI is 7, RAX is 0. And for return, it's very simple. We just have 1 byte of instruction, which is 90. So now, as I said, hardware would see only this bit stream, right? And it will have to decode the instruction, determine what kind of instruction it is, then actually implement what is the operation. So that's actually what you would do in next week's. So let's see another example with a jump instruction. So here, this is a very simple code snippet. We are adding values of RAX and putting it in RX, and then remember that add, subtract, XOR, and. So these are the 4 operations that sets the flags. So based on the flags, we are supposed to jump to this memory location. And let's assume this is the address of that location. So the first instruction is add Q. We go here. We know that it starts with 6. For add, we are supposed to put 0. For the 2 registers, the value is again 0. So this is the encoding for add Q, RX, RX. So for the next one, it's jump greater than or greater than an equal. So for the jump instructions, it starts with 7. The first 4 bits are 7, so we put 7. Then we have to look up what function code What function code we have for greater and equal. And if you look up the table, you will see it's 5. And then we have to put the destination value. And again, like we have to put it as little Indian. So that's why it starts with 2, 3. So this is the LSB, then 0, 1, and rest of the MSBs are zeros. Any question? No? Okay. So let's see the opposite direction. So given some bit stream, how should we decode the instruction? So first we actually need to know where the instructions start and end. And because it's a variable length ISA, we actually have to decode the instruction before we know where it ends. But for simplicity, like I have just pointed out the locations where the instructions start. But we have to go through each byte to determine what kind of instruction it is. So first one starts with 0, with 2. And here we know that the only kind of instruction that starts with 2 is some move instruction, and it takes 2 bytes. So that's when we actually know that 6-0 is the starting point of the next instruction. Now we have to look at the second 4 bits in the first byte, which is 0, basically, which means that register to register move, like move without actually looking at the condition code. And then we have 1 and 0, which we will look up the table and figure out what register it is. So basically, what we will have at the end is register to register move, RCX and RAX. After that, we could move to the next instruction, which starts with 6. And we know that any instruction that starts with 6 is our logical or arithmetic operation, and it takes 2 bytes. But in order to figure out exact what operation, we have to look at the function bits. And we know, we see that it's 0, and figure out that it's an add instruction. The add instruction says that the second byte contains the register indexes, so we figure out those. So basically, kind of, given that the bit stream and this table, you can actually do it. So this one I will kind of skip, but we will look at the next one, the jump one. So here, the jump instruction starts, so it's this one. So it starts with 7, which basically says that it is a jump instruction and it will take 9 bytes. And 2 says that it is less than, the condition is less than. But then remember that whatever value that we have here for the destination, it's in Little Indian. So that's why we will start with the 84 and put it in the LSB. And all the MSBs become 0. So when we are decoding the value for immediate or destination, just be careful because it's in Little Indian. And I guess then it's kind of very simple that we have some other instructions. So basically, this is what I had for today, but do you have any questions?
Yes. Earlier, a couple of classes ago, we were talking about computer jumps. Does YA6 have that?
Why computers have jump instructions?
Computer jumps.
Computer jumps, like the conditional, predicated?
Like jumps that take a register argument.
Why do we have that?
Does it have that?
Oh, this one, does it have that? No. So you can see that here, for jump instruction, the format is just immediate. So there is no RA or RB here. So that's why it doesn't support it. And you can say that, like, I don't like Y86. I want my ISF, which has jump instruction with register values. After you're done with this course, you can design that. Like, you will know how to design that.
If you wanted to translate assembly with a jump like that, you could write the address to jump to your memory and then return. Probably the easiest way.
Any more question? Okay, I guess that's it for today. We will see you next week.